believe that human rights are the issue, why are you not discussing boycotting the entire state of Texas? You ought to be doing that. You're not doing that, but you should be. Nobody's discussing doing that. We as black people want to sit around and sit on our thumbs while people are out. Understand something. It's good to be the Sultan this weekend. Brothers and sisters, it's good. Because he's staring down Jay Leno, Ellen DeGeneres, Richard Branson. And if that man wants to build a billion-dollar hotel complex tomorrow in Los Angeles, guess what's going to happen? They are going to throw the doors wide open to him. They are going to throw the doors wide open. Because he has power, he has wealth, thus he has influence. And he is protected and insulated against people who want to speak against what he is doing in his own country. He is protected against you. All that these folk can do is protest and get a few effeminate suspect writers on Yahoo to whine and mule with them. But they can't break him. You can't stop him and you can't break him. Oh, you wish you could, but you can't. You wish you could, but you can't. And he's got, as black people have been walking the soil of America now for 400 years, and in the last 50, I got people telling us that money doesn't matter. What? Remember the last jackass who called in and said that? Money don't matter. You're going to get a few of you together and you're going to take on white supremacy with just a few people? Take a look at the Sultan of Brunei. He's one man. And American soil, white supremacy can't touch him. Yeah. The Negro who was daydreaming last night about stealing a bunch of AK-47s, because, of course, the AK-47 is the ultimate weapon against the most well-financed, largest, and most sophisticated military in the existence of mankind. Of course, the AK-47 and a bunch of trained dope smokers from California, of course, you're going to be ready to take on the Green Berets. Yeah. Because easy to talk about stealing a bunch of guns that you're never going to steal because you're never going to do it. That's easy. Talking about acquiring power, wealth, and influence, that is hard as hell. Now, that's what you can't just talk and daydream and puff on a few joints and determine how to get power, wealth, and influence. Any idiot can get arrested trying to break into a pawn shop. It takes smart people to develop power, wealth, and influence. We're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines now. The number is 646-787-1933. 646-787-1933 is your personal access code to the Blackest Radio Program in existence. Your time to get in. Call 347. You're live with TBA and Black Truth on the blackchannel.net radio. What's your name? Where you come?
Greetings, my brother. How you doing? This is Brother G.
At home.
I'm calling you from Queens, New York, man. I'm calling from Queens, New York, man.
And what's the sign?
Kind of a shaky connection here. Sorry about that. Connection. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you kind of... What was on your mind?
I've been off and on, man, hearing you talk and... hearing what you're doing, man, and I admire what you're doing. I congratulate you on the 7 a.m. project. Specifically, I had some people give me a call after you did the thing last night on the Lame of Thrones.
Okay, brother. Yes, brother, we're here. Everybody hears you. Go ahead and get to your point, please.
I am the author of the Shades of Memnon book series, and I am a historical adventure historian, and I do exactly what you were talking about that's lacking in terms of storytelling. I'm a historian, and I've done a lot of research for a very, very long time, and I produce, well, now I'm into my third series, directly dealing with what you were talking about last night on your broadcast.
Okay, first of all, I did that a few days ago, actually, not last night. But, and I've done a video series about that, actually. I've got a video I did on YouTube about Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
So I have a spin about that, but I'm really familiar with your work, and that's quite all right, because that's not the real issue that I had, though. The real issue that I had, and everybody, what he's referring to is when I was talking about there aren't really black writers out there that have the intellectual capacity to be able to write the kind of books that, like a George R.R. Martin has done or something like that. A lot of folks got to write gangster tales and whatnot, and that kind of childish, infantile, emotionally retarded faith is never going to get you anywhere, because that's not what people are going to. So
yeah, you're right. You're right, brother. Yeah, you're exactly right, Brother Jason. My work is based on the ancient Kushite cultures around the world in ancient times. And what I do is I do research into ancient history, and I always find, because we're always there, these fantastic individuals and nations in ancient times. My first book series is based on Memnon, who was the African hero who fought in the Trojan War that very few people know about. And for that book series, I received the Octavia Butler Humanitarian Award in 2009 at the Jacob Javits Center at the Book Expo. That book series also was optioned for movies by Wesley Snipes before he went to jail. I don't know what his current situation is right now, but we're supposed to pick back up on it when he gets things together. So what I do, brother, is I create the sort of empowerment stories that you were talking about when you were addressing the issue. My work is used in rites of passage programs. A lot of martial artists assign my books to their students in the dojo. And my purpose, my brother, is to do the sort of uncompromising empowerment stories that you're always advocating, and to create a different, separate economy based on it also.
Okay, well, I mean, I think that's all wonderful and everything. I don't have a problem. I can't judge anything, though, based on potential. I can only judge it based on results. So how mm-hmm. have your book sales mm-hmm. been?
My book sales have been very, very good, my brother.
Can you put a numerical figure on very, very good?
I would put a figure I would say about 60,000-70,000 books over the years since I've started producing what I do.
Okay, the last book that you put out, the very last one you put out, you said Shades of Memnon. How many copies did you sell of that?
I would say probably, no, not the Shades of Memnon. That's back in the day, man. That came out.
Okay, what was your last book you wrote? What was your last book you wrote?
The last book I wrote is called it's called Nimrod the Hunter. And
okay.
That's probably sold.
How many copies of Nimrod the Hunter have you sold today?
That's probably sold about 12,000 books by now.
Okay, 12,000 books.
Yeah, and that's been out probably about a year and a half. And it's probably sold those low numbers because I've been focusing and concentrating on something else since that book has come out, and this is something that you'll be interested in. I've gotten together with some very interesting people.
Well, I'll take your word for it on that, but here's my real issue. Here's my real issue.
Yeah.
How long have you been a writer?
Say it again.
Yeah, what was your name again?
My name is Brother G.
Hello, Brother G.
Yeah, Greg Walker, Brother G, Greg Walker.
Okay, I'm going to say, because I don't think your books say Brother G on the front of them, but what I will say
is
that...
You'll see that on, You'll see that on the cover of the books, brother. You can go to Amazon.com and...
That's fine. You don't have to plug them here. That's fine. But here's my real point, okay? I think it's wonderful that you've gotten somebody to publish your books. I really, really do think that's wonderful.
No, I published those books, brother Jason. I published those books myself, brother.
Okay,
I created my own publishing and marketing and merchandising and animation house, man. This is what I've been working on for the past probably about 2 years.
I have a couple of issues, though. Maybe you can help me out here. I've got a few issues, though. When did you release your book, Nimrod the Hunter?
About a year and a half ago.
Okay. You released the book about 18 months ago. In 18 months, you have sold 11 or 12,000 copies.
Yeah, and that's mostly because I've been working on my other project, my brother, which is I've created an animation company offshore based in the Bahamas.
Well, I will be the last one to tell people not to split their attention too much because things could suffer, because certainly I do a fair amount of that myself. Here's the problem that I have. The problem that I have is that when somebody's been publishing books as long as you have here, and they basically have sold less than 1,000 copies a month, I start wondering at that point, because how many books altogether have you published for yourself?
This would be the fourth book, the fifth one coming out in a couple months.
Okay, you've published four books, and so far your fan base has expanded to the point of being able to buy more than 600 or 700 copies a month over the course of a year and a half. Now, that's good to keep yourself employed. Don't get me wrong, buddy. That's not, you know, it's not chicken feed as far as, hey, he's made a job for himself, he's earning money doing what he loves doing. I do not have a problem with that. Nothing at all.
Right.
The problem that I have with this, however, is I'm wondering about while you are not doing a bunch of hood stories, that's fine, that's great. Here's the problem that I have. When I spoke about the quality of Mr. Martin's writing, by that what I mean is that I can show you dialogue from Game of Thrones that they quote this stuff. Great lines that he made. There's a beast inside every man, and it stirs when you put a sword in his hands. And the episode that came on a couple of weeks ago where Tywin Lannister is explaining to Tommen the errors of the three kings that came before him, and then about what Tommen would consider to be the most valuable asset for a king to have with them. Like I said, it's things like that, even the black authors who try to get out of this sorely miss. Now, whenever we discuss black authors, people tend to get upset because I don't give a whole lot of credence to them. Now, why is that? Or even the ones who are outside of those genres that I have problems with. The reason for that is because usually people sit up here and try to rattle off the same three names. But the top of that list is going to be Charles Saunders and Octavia Butler. There are only two problems with Charles Saunders and Octavia Butler. First, Octavia Butler is a black woman who called herself a science fiction writer, but nobody else did. That's the first problem. She was a female who was famous for saying that she wrote science fiction, and white folks simply include her name so that you won't say that they're racist. But in reality, none of her stuff actually had anything to do with science. Just because you have a story that takes place off of Earth does not mean that that is science fiction. Science fiction is usually going to require you to introduce to us some type of scientific element to it. For example, on Star Trek, the whole issue of Star Trek is based on what? Transwarp drive.
That's right.
Enterprise and all of the technologies that go into making a gigantic space vessel. And it's not really supposed to be a spaceship like a rocket ship. It's supposed to be like a giant space watercraft, like a giant steamship or a giant cruise ship, a giant battleship, is really what the Enterprise is supposed to be like. So most people think of it like a rocket. In reality, it's supposed to be like a giant ocean ship. But Octavia Butler never did that. Let's just be honest. She never did that. Mr. Saunders is a bit of a difference in far as material, but let's just be, can we be frank about this? If your work was really so great after 20 years of publishing, you have a fan base that is out of this world. After 20 years, after two decades, if you're still selling south of 25,000 copies per book, because understand something, Marvel and DC sell over 100,000 copies of the Spider-Man and X-Men every month and have consistent 10 years. So what I'm saying is that if they can do that with a comic book, and yet a writer cannot amass more of a fan base over two decades, you're doing this. Maybe the work is as good as they tell themselves it is, because the numbers are bearing out that you're not bringing in converts. And if your numbers are staying south 25,000, not only are you not bringing in new converts, you aren't keeping the ones you got, the ones you have.
Yeah, I can tell you, Brother Jason, I'm intimately familiar with both of those authors. I actually do know Saunders. And I'll tell you something about Saunders. Saunders is a great writer, but he doesn't know any more about black culture or African history, anything that you can't read in a National Geographic magazine. That's one of the things about Saunders. The other thing about Saunders is this. Saunders has not been a consistent writer. That's been his big problem. He was... The character that this Imaro character that they keep talking about is something that he invented in the 70s, and he abandoned the work, you know, that he does now. And he's been a newspaper man for a very, very long time. Some fans found his work, and they sort of dragged him back out. So he really has not even updated his information with his projects with new information that's come out about black history. That's one thing, when he didn't really know that much in the first place. That's part of the problem with Brother Saunders. He's really not created a market. He's not been based on that. And the other thing with Octavia Butler, I got an award in Octavia Butler's name in 2009 at the Jacob Javits Center for my Shades of Memnon book series. I got the Octavia Butler Humanitarian Award when I was over there. Now, the thing about Octavia Butler is her work had very, very little to do with black people per se. She did a lot of stuff about these, spacey sci-fi concepts and stuff like that, but it really didn't have a lot to do with us in particular. And so what happened was, she became the darling of that industry, sort of like a token, man. That's really what the deal was. And she's a great writer. She's a fantastic writer. I met her one time. She was a wonderful lady, man. But these are what you're talking about are individuals that were not set up, and they were never set up, and they were never supported, and they never went after a market. What I've done, my brother, Jason, what I have done is I've made my whole thing with the writing was to go the Oscar Michaud route. That's what I've done. That's the reason why I haven't focused on building a huge fan base with the books and stuff like that. They were basically proof of concept to get me what I needed to do what I'm really doing now, which is getting into animation and movies. That's the real thing. That's what I've been doing.
How is your animation thing? How is your animation project coming?
It's going good so far, man. I've teamed up with Jeffrey Portier, who is Sidney Poitier's nephew. And we have an offshore company based in the Bahamas. And we're putting together what we need to do to actually get what we need out there now. And on top of that, we're pairing that up with a lot of the new, I don't know if you're familiar with the new decentralized technologies out there for delivering, communicating, and trading funds economically. That's all incorporated into it also. So that's what I've been doing, man. I've been laying the groundwork to make Awesome a show move.
Well, I think that kind of thing is important, and we definitely, like, he wanted to own his films and theaters and whatnot. I think that kind of thing is important. You're not the only one who's been trying to do that. Now, when you say that you're looking into animation and stuff like that, I mean, I don't do it because I want to beat up on people about stuff. That's not what I'm saying, and I don't want people to get me wrong. It's not about beating up on people. What it is about, these people have got top-notch stories with top-notch dialogue, and that's why people keep coming back week after week after week, hanging on every word, because these are top-notch stories. You don't need millions of dollars to come up with a top-notch story. You might need millions to produce it to a movie, but everybody is on equal footing when it comes to writing. The only way that you lose at writing is if you ain't got much of an imagination or don't have much vocal skills to be able to cultivate this idea and make it interesting to people. So, but everybody is on equal footing when it comes to a pen and a piece of paper. You all got the same, you're all equal at that point. It's only the amount of imagination and ability to tell a story that's going to separate you. And most black actors today lack that ability because they really only concentrate on simple concepts like who's sleeping with whom and Thugalicious and all that nonsense. So I'm not familiar with
that, brother.
With your book series about that, but the bar needs to be raised on that. Now, as far as animation is concerned, once again, everybody's got an idea for a cartoon, but very few people actually have the idea to make something that people are going to watch. I'm so far out of the loop on animation today that it's not even cute anymore. But what as far as your idea for doing that, I think that's wonderful. I mean, do you have a studio in particular that you're working with? Or because you said you all are just working in the Bahamas. So, I mean, I didn't know there was a lot going on over there.
You can set up your studio anywhere, man. Your studio can float around on different computers all over the world. It's where the money's coming to. And how the money is distributed,
what I'm saying is that when you're putting together an animated project, I mean, people have to be able to work together and collaborate. You want somebody who knows how to do animation. And that's why people usually get a studio that does that, because they've already got experience at it. They can give you timetables, not a bunch of excuses. The stuff's going to look consistent, yada, yada, yada. Because I don't want one guy who's working on YouTube Boom and another guy's working using Radius. You know, now for those of you who are not familiar, those are the programs that they do modern animation with. Toon Boom was used on a lot of the Justice League stuff, but for the Japanese, who are the top of the heap, they use a program called Radius. And Radius is going to run you like $15,000, so that's why only the biggest animation houses have Radius, because it's a monster program that's got a monster licensing fee. But in any case, I'm just saying, for consistency's sake, I mean, I understand, you know, you got to do what you got to do, and I'm not telling you don't, but what I'm saying is I kind of wonder what the quality of this is going to be like if we're just fishing it out to, you know, Marlo and Rollo and James and everything else around the world. I kind of have questions about that at that point, about quality and consistency at that point.
Well, let me help you up to a couple of things, man, about my work and about what I'm doing. First of all, in terms of the quality of my writing, I will ultimately let you be the judge of that, because you can go online and actually get the books and you can get excerpts of the books and stuff like that. So I won't ultimately speak on that, except to tell you this. When my first book came out in Chicago, where I was, they had something called the Black Books Fair, and they gave a national award to several authors every single year. When I got an award, they gave me the Best New Author of the Year award. The same year I got that award, George Frazier got an award. A couple other national people got an award. This was my first book. out of the box. When they gave me this award, Brother Jason, they handed me this award and they said, "We cannot believe what we have read with that this young man put out." He writes, and this is a direct quote, he writes as if he comes from people that have never been enslaved. All right? Because my books are filled with the type of honor, the type of upliftment, the type of non-uncompromising action and adventure that you, my sir, advocate all the time. That's one thing about my writing. The second thing about the animation house that we're putting together, because of the technology now, if you can go online, you can see a lot of this on YouTube. There are people who have the ability to come together across countries, and they can actually work virtually on the same project at the same time from different computers all around the world. And then on top of that, go ahead, Brother Jason.
I'm very familiar with computer animation.
Go ahead.
I'm extremely familiar with all that. That's why I named off Toon Boom and Raiders. I'm very familiar with what they use. My thing is that a workforce is a workforce, especially when you got a bunch of people who've never worked together. So I'm not saying don't, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, if anything, that I would kind of wince at that myself if I was putting that kind of thing together. But here's my real thing about that. I think everything you're saying is wonderful. I think it's fine. I've never read your stuff. I'll see about checking it out. My concern, though, is that with so much going on there, because you said you're situation, okay? I mean, is this going to be your film or a series?
We're working on a series now. It's going to be an internet-based series now.
Okay, so that means there's going to be less than 30 minutes an episode. That's good. That'll help keep your costs down.
It might not be that low, Brother Jason. It might not be that we're looking at something between 30 and 40 minutes an episode.
Okay, 30 or 40 minutes an episode.
Yeah, 30,
40
minutes
an episode. Okay, well, that's a little bit leverage, but...
Yeah, I have a trailer, man, that I'll send over to you so you can take a look at it.
Okay, well, like I said, animation is pretty expensive. Whole minutes. That's pretty expensive.
Even for a big corporation,
technically speaking, usually 30 minutes of traditional hand-drawn animation is going to run you around, you know, that's usually going to run you around, is usually going to run you around $100,000 all the way up to $300,000. So, I mean, those things are expensive to be able to do that. Now, if you found a way to get that done cheap, I think that's great. I think that's wonderful.
Brother Jason, we found a way, Brother Jason, to get people to kick back money to these projects. In other words, all around the world, you have different countries who are competing to have people come in there and hire their people to do work and get as much as 50% of a kickback on your project from these countries. This is what we're looking at.
Okay, well, definitely, if that works out, man, let me know, and we'd like to take a look into that kind of thing. Also, what you're going to want to consider doing is you're going to want to consider doing a motion comic of some of your work. That's a whole lot deeper than regular animation, and it'll give people, you know, the ability to sample 5 minutes of it without having to read it. You know, that's the kind of thing. It's worked for Rome. It's worked for Spartacus. It's worked for a bunch of other things. And in your case, I think that would be an excellent idea to help people to overcome some of their – to help them overcome maybe some of their assumptions about what exactly it is you're capable of doing or what you bring to the table for that. So I'm going to make that suggestion. You got those artists with you and everything. Consider having them put together a motion comic, you know, an illustration of 4 or 5 minutes of your storytelling so that people can get some idea of what kind of story they'll be getting from you and what to expect from the rest of it. Because a book is one thing, But, you know, like I said, give them an excerpt like that, I think it'll make it easier to digest. But
yeah, Brother Jason, this is something that we've done before.
Could be an episode. We've done
motion comics before.
Oh, good. Do you have it online where we can see it?
Yeah, you can go online and see it, man. I'll send you a link so you can go over there and check it out.
Yeah, you're gonna send me a link where?
It's on YouTube, man. I'll send you a link to it.
Yes, I know it's on YouTube. I'm asking, how are you going to send that to me?
I will put it up and post it on, I think you have Twitter, you got Facebook. Am I correct about that?
Yes, but are you one of my Facebook friends?
I believe so. Yes, I am.
Okay, if you're on my Facebook friends list, then yes.
Yeah, you'll be able to see that. I'll also send you over a link to the latest animated project. We have a full, I think it's about a minute trailer. I'll let you take a look at that also. We're pretty sophisticated, Brother Jason. The reason why you haven't heard about it is because we've been in stealth mode, brother. There's a lot of stuff that we're doing that we have not revealed to the world, and I wanted to let you know, very much, because I respect you. I really respect what you're doing, and I want to let you know that there are people out here, myself and a couple of my colleagues, who are doing exactly what you're doing, what you're talking about doing, with the exact amount of credibility and professionalism that you talk about.
Well, that's the concept I want to hear so we can start setting a new standard. But definitely your stuff. I'll see about taking a look at it.
Once again, my brother, I really appreciate what you do, man.
Well, and ammovie.com, definitely do that, because it'll be the thing that helps to talk to people nationally about why building our own economy is important, and I think that would be the kind of thing you'd be interested in helping see people perpetuate as well. But thank you very much for giving us all night. I will take a look forward to seeing that, and important to see as well. I was just checking things over here and whatnot. I may need to make some adjustments if it continues doing that. Let's see if I can take another caller here. Caller from 856, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Black first, Mr. Jason. How you doing?
What's your name? Where you calling from?
My name is Kyle. I'm calling from South Jersey.
And what's on your mind?
Is Professor Truth still there with you?
Yeah, what's up?
Hi, how you doing? I was actually listening to you on the broadcast about a day or two ago, and you went into a rant talking about eugenics, and I thought it was kind of interesting, but to, do a little brainstorming here, what was your concept, and can you elaborate on that? Because I thought it was interesting.
I was speaking tongue halfway in cheek.
I know what you mean. But can you elaborate on that tongue-in-cheek?
Be more specific. When you say that, what do you mean?
Like, for example, like you were saying how with eugenics, you're forward for getting rid of the dumb people and allowing the smart people to thrive, which I thought was pretty comical. However, I feel as though eugenics is being used to get rid of the smart people, because if you do so, well, actually, I've been reading some reports that in the United States, the birth rate has gone down because of the economic climate that we're in. However, I go through the many hoods that I see, especially in Camden, the one that I live near, and I see babies getting born every single day, every single second. There's always somebody new pregnant, yet the people who want to get their money right and get their situations right are waiting to have children because they understand how expensive they are.
All right, well, as far as eugenics goes, whenever I have somebody who questions me about eugenics, they usually fall into one of two categories. The first category happens to be somebody who basically, you know, they live, eat, and breathe Margaret Sanger, and they basically obsess over her. And as far as they're concerned, the second you say eugenics, they have their pre-canned script, and off we go. The second group of people fall into the category that I'm in, which is at the end of the day, you take the world the way that it is, and you're not sitting there necessarily going, oh, there's this group of people who are poisoning water, you know, systematically, not the way that you might be thinking. Of course, you know, dumping pollutants in the air brings down acid rain. That's the only mass water pollution that I can think of. But I don't want to get off too much into the conspiracy theory land. Here's the point that I was trying to make. The thing that is leading to the destruction of the smart people, it's not eugenics. It's the smartphone. It's the Real Housewives of whatever. And it's the Wendy Williams experience. That's what's killing off the smart people. Because what's happening is the dumb people are sitting here deciding to fornicate at a supersonic rate. And if you don't, you know, if you don't believe that, well, just consider this. There are 45 million black people in the United States. Out of that 45 million black people, how many of them do you think even know about the blackchannel.net? Better yet, of the 45 million, how many of them, if they didn't know, would sit there and say, you know what, this is what we need. Now, are we going to blame that on, you know, excessive amounts of fluoride in the water? Are we going to blame that on genetically modified food? Are we going to blame that on chemtrails? You tell me. Are we going to? There's conspiracy theorizing that could make sense. And then there's just people who don't understand the world around them, and they're looking for some sort of sinister order to it. I've had people who you would know very well who have said that I was some sort of agent, I suppose, of the Illuminati, because they didn't like my RIP Black America video. These are people who I'm sure that if I said their name, you would know them, who actually accused me of being an agent. Not because I said anything bad, but just they didn't like what I said. So you tell me, do you think that you're sitting here talking to an Illuminati agent right now? Or do you think you're talking to somebody? Exactly.
Oh, no.
That's the point that I'm trying to make. So as far as my use of eugenics goes, you know, could I have used another word? Sure, I could have. But at the end of the day, when I want to poke somebody in the eyeball, I'm going to go ahead and just do it. I'm not going to sit there and beat around the bush. So, yeah, I'll take the word eugenics and have a little bit of fun with it, although it's not a laughing matter. I understand the severity of what it is that you're talking about. But at the end of the day, we as intelligent black society are drowning in a sea of dumb. We are outnumbered by people who have been procreating, for the sake of doing so, a lot of unthinking behavior. And, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, I don't want to sit there and have people clearly don't understand what legacy means, what survival means, who don't give a rip about economic power, who could care less about black having value. I don't want these people sitting here deciding that, you know, let's be part of the same family. We have nothing in common. We have nothing in common. You know, there's an old saying in the black community, you may be my color, but you're my kind. So if the only thing that black means to some people is just the amount of melanin in your skin, if that's all it means, then you have a shallow definition of black. Black incorporates an entire constellation, not just of biological traits, but a value system, a real value system. And that value system isn't going to be given to you by VH1, and it cannot be informed by Jay-Z or Babyface. Intelligent black people think for themselves. And by the way, one more thing, my brother. The intelligent black value system, it doesn't place a whole lot of weight on conspiracy theories. Because at the end of the day, even if you are right that there's some evil white people who are, taking syringes and pumping chemicals into the Coca-Cola bottles, I've heard that, by the way, before too. And if they're lacing Jolly Ranchers with LSD or what have you, to foment violence in the black community, even if all that stuff turns out to be 110% true, here's my question. What does that change? Would you sit there and go, oh, we're at war, we're at war? Would that suddenly make you say we're at war? I don't need them to be sitting here pointing my food to be at war with them. The very fact that they stand in the way of my economic progress and me getting my fair share of the world, that's enough right there. That is enough right there. So as far as my use the term eugenics to go ahead and be a little ironic.
Yeah, you're being facetious. I understand that.
Yeah, some people are going to hear that and they're going to go, oh, eugenics, he's in favor of eugenics. Well, you know what, to be bluntly honest with you, I feel like Dave Chappelle when he was talking about I'm a conspiracy theorist a little bit. Well, let's just say when I see 300 children who half of them are pregnant, the other half have dropped out of seventh grade, and they're sitting there having brawls at the middle of an intersection, the first thing comes to my mind is, gee, I'd sure like to see their gen makeup.
Right. No, but I certainly do believe that we can use less stupid, which is obvious, we can use less stupid and more intelligence. But the thing is, like, when an intelligent black person tries to speak to a black person that's caught up in the status quo, it's kind of hard to get through to them. So I understand what you're saying is just leave them alone, let them go, let them go off and do their stupid things and come with us to build a black economy and to create power, wealth, and influence. And for the longest time, I've been beating my head over it, and then I ran into TBA's broadcast here, and it brought for me a lot of clarity and a lot of understanding on what was really going on and how to shift some of that frustrating energy that I have into something more more constructive. Because at the end of the day, we got to do it for ourselves because nobody else is going to. And another point I wanted to make was that you were talking about black feminists. My thing is this, like, okay, for all of you black women listening out there, when you walk into a room with a whole bunch of non-black people, what do you think they see first, you as a woman or you as a black person? Because I know that when I walk into a room full of non-black people, they see a black person first, then a man second. So that's why the whole term black first is really important. But I just wanted to leave it at that.
All right. Thank you very much for giving us a call here tonight. Please check in with us again. If you haven't been by 7, you definitely need to do that. The website is 7ammove.com, and definitely going to be something that you're going to want to check out as well. Now, a couple of things come to mind here, though, from the call we just had here, brothers and sisters. A couple of things come to mind, and one of the things that gets my attention quickly is the fact that we as black people, we tend to have a very bad habit of focusing on detritus and minutia. We don't really focus on things that are going to make a big difference, okay? We're able to learn how to separate ourselves and to separate that line, as it were, to cross that line and separate ourselves from distractions. So we are not good enough. And what I'm here to say to you is that your answers will be good enough if you actually start taking some initiative with them. But brothers and sisters, we can't sit here and turn everything into a wine fest about stuff. We can't do that. We can't sit up here and keep looking at the problems and never develop a solution. That's not what we can do. As black people, we're supposed to be about more than just that. As black people, we're supposed to be the answers people. We're supposed to be the answers people. And for many of you, especially as black men who were not raised to think that you were supposed to be leading things, that's why a lot of this may be scary to you. I want to get over that as well. Brothers and sisters, we've been distracted for too long. I make a call to everybody who's listening to this broadcast right now. If you are truly serious about getting things fixed, truly serious to take care of, and you want to deal with some black folk who understand that, the telephone lines are open here for you here. We started everything on this side here, which is why if you were on Blog Talk, what happened was I restarted it because there was some distortion going on. I'm hoping that this has fixed that. The telephone number is 646-787-1933, 646-787-1933. That's your personal access code to your program at the University of the Only Kind on planet Earth today. And Professor Truth, did it seem to you like maybe black folk love being distracted, and you and I have talked about this for years and years now. We love being distracted by things because we tell ourselves, at least we think to ourselves, that that is going to alleviate from us the responsibility for actually getting something done. It's only when you start asking these people, okay, what have you done, that's what makes a problem.
Yeah. As black people, we seem to have a small aversion to that responsibility thing. We pretty much look at the problems of the world that are in front of us and we're saying somebody else needs to solve it. But then again, when you have decided to take on a culture of cars, clothes, and hoes, you're going to sit there and act like lifestyles of the indebted and indigent. I guess that's the best that you can get. So when I see 600 black people who get it, that does my heart good. Because what it shows me is, yeah, intelligent black society does have what it takes, and there will be more in time, a lot more. But it also does my heart good to know that this core group is not going to be dragging any stragglers. We had a young man who called in about a week or so ago, and he said that basically, and I touched on this earlier, he said that basically that the black empowerment movement would be like a train, and you know, if you get your head on right, we might be nice and let you back in. And I told him, no, it's more like an ark. And when Noah closed the door to that ark, that's it. Those who did not build the ark, those who were not smart enough to understand what was coming, they got left behind. And there was no place for them. Now, some of you were going to say, that sounds mean. Really? Just out of curiosity, was what happened to Amadou Diallo mean? What happened to Trayvon Martin, was that mean? What I'm telling you is that we are in a fight, and the fight is being done through economics. We are being wiped out through the allocation of resources. That's what economics is about. We have no access to food and water unless the people who hate us give it to us. We have decided we're not going to provide for ourselves, so we live in the worst areas on earth. And anytime somebody says we need to have a conversation about black empowerment, almost in the first 5 minutes, the conversation gets derailed by sports, music, or some sort of sexual banality. And a group of people like that aren't going anywhere. So yeah, we're going to thin the herd. Intelligent black society is going to be on the march because I'm sick and tired of having to sit back and watch as white supremacy is kicking us in the head every day. And the only thing we got to say for ourselves is one of these days we're going to hit you back. One of these days you better quit that. One of these days, nah. That day is here now. And for the 600 people who have decided that they want to be part of the elite, forget about the 300. We got the 600 here. This is how we're going to turn around. The reason that we don't have control of black culture is because media is the defining force of the culture, and we don't own any of it. Until now. Until this place. You look at all the other venues, and I'm talking about the ones that have been started on the internet, everywhere, Blog Talk to Ustream to YouTube, and what do you see? You see the same stupid conversations. Relationships, cars, and celebrity gossip. And the people who are doing that, they're going to keep that up as long as they have money for an internet connection or as long as they're able to log into Facebook. But that may not be an issue for much longer because the FCC has decided that they're going to give corporations free rein. So a lot of the stupidity that we've been hearing is going to go away. But a lot of the intelligence might be challenged as well. Notice the wording that I'm using, challenged. It was TBA who said that the strong would survive through their ingenuity. And that's what we're going to do. I've spent the last few days just working on a video statement about why 7 a.m. matters. And this is going to be Professor Truth's manifesto to the world, that place. We, who saw the dangers and were preparing ourselves to face them down, we got it. 7 a.m. is going to become a watchword. It's going to enter the lexicon in the same way that Denmark Vesey did, the same way that Nat Turner did, the same way that By Any Means Necessary did. It is going to be one of those times and one of those statements where intelligent black society said, we are speaking for ourselves. But the difference between this and others is that this time we are going to make sure that this movement doesn't get co-opted. That's the reason why every week you see TBA and myself taking the hard line. If you want to stop the weak, the frauds, the phonies, and the passers through from glomming on, what you do is you make it where it's a very unfriendly place for those kind of people. I told you many times that the hottest fire makes for the strongest steel. And for those of you who happen to be made out of iron, the flames don't bother you at all. It purifies you. Everybody else, not so much. Now in the chat room, Johnny's making mention about the ATT acquisition of DirecTV. So a lot of you folk out there, you have, not that you'll notice, but there's one less media outlet that could speak for itself and act in its own interests. They've been gobbled up by ATT. And you'll recall, as TBA was instructing you, they did surveys asking what's more important to you. Would you prioritize rent or your phone? And people said they prioritize their phone. AT&T understands that technology is going to give them mind control. And it will, for the weak-willed, for the ignorant, for the people who sit there and actually spend hours a day arguing with themselves about what kind of protective cover to get for their cell phone. Those people, the roadkill generation, those guys are going to be sitting there letting AT&T tell them what to think until the moment that they drop dead. Intelligent black society takes up a new position to defend itself. By the way, the young man who called in and asked about eugenics earlier, I couldn't help notice nobody sits there and gets very bothered about the softcore eugenics that are taking place every day in our neighborhoods at the hands of the very corporations that we give money to. Sorry, brother, but any time that people will sit there and gladly give money to a cell phone store but will not put that money together so that they can have a grocery store in their own neighborhood, I'm talking about you, Detroit. That's a group of people who have signed their own collective suicide pact. That's eugenics right there, except the difference is it didn't come from a corporation. It came from the victims. That's the reason why you don't see me been too out of shape about that. Black first every day of my life. As far as I'm concerned, there is no conspiracy that's going to be able to defeat me because I'm not looking at my enemy's power. I'm looking at my own. And now through this place that's been built, thanks to the Black Authority, we got at least 600 people who have signed on, and we will be looking to each other's power. So while the world becomes a place where power consolidates and the few voices that were able to speak will be silenced, I believe that intelligent black society is going to be able to prosper, mainly because intelligent black society will be one of the few havens where black people are able to speak for themselves. You see, it's real cute when you can get on YouTube, advertiser-sponsored, of course, and you can sit there and talk about date and the gender wars. Notice how I don't do that stuff anymore. These are distractions when you sit there and just fixate on it. Those people are going to find the new landscape becoming very, very uncomfortable for them. They actually think that the big media powers want them there. Let me tell you something. The only thing that the media powers want, and this includes the internet-based ones, they want audiences. They want audiences. So if you think that they actually value the 4,000 or 5,000subscribers that you've got, they don't. Because at the end of the day, they're not looking to have a couple of commercials on your show or a pause for a break for our sponsor. What they want is people who are going to buy their products, who are going to contribute to their power. I can understand that. The world runs on money, and corporations get that. And black people, on the other hand, are sitting there saying, well, as long as I've got enough money for Coca-Cola, as long as I got money for new rims, I'll be able to take a picture with my new Samsung phone, and I'll be able to post it on Facebook, and I'll also be able to go to Buffalo Wild Wings afterwards and take a picture of my dinner just before I get kicked out on the streets. Now, that's genocide by the victims, not genocide by the usual suspects. And you're not going to see a lot of boo-hooing and singing the blues about it from intelligent black society, because we, for the longest time, have had a big problem with political confusion. We got individuals who were among us who were finding new and inventive ways to talk about spirituality, sexual grooviness, and the Real Housewives or whatever. We're sitting here going, well, maybe we can wake them up, wake them up. How many decades have we spent trying to wake these clowns up? And they just won't. That's why Black Authority said, for those of you who are asleep, hold your position, George Zimmerman's coming. Or it's going to be somebody else. As for intelligent black society, gird your loins, sharpen your blades, fill up your weapons, and make sure that you support the efforts of those who get it. Because as we take back our culture, what's also going to happen is we're going to become stronger. And as our strength grows, we will become targets. Keep saying this over and over again, because right now is the calm before the storm. And when the rain begins to fall, those of us who have taken refuge inside of the ark that we built for ourselves, we're going to ride out the storm. And the waters will recede, and intelligent black society will be the only ones standing. That's a day that I look forward to. You're not going to sit there and ask Professor Truth, does it bother you to have, you know, to have black people in just total charge of everything? That doesn't bother me at all. I got no problem with that whatsoever. I could not imagine asking a Latino, do you have a problem with Hispanics being totally in charge? You go to California, you go to Arizona, you go to New Mexico, that's all you're going to see. They're not sitting there bothered by that. And the Asians are bothered by total control in San Francisco or Seattle. And the whites dang sure ain't concerned about total control of Connecticut or Idaho. But black people, you know, total control, that bothers us. This is a lack of confidence in ourselves. We see no value in black. So we also see no value in black leadership. And that's probably the result of a media that we don't have any control over. Voices that tell us day and night that we have a bunch of problems, but never tells what the solutions are. And when someone says what the solution is, he gets an argument. He gets pushback. I'm glad that this place exists. I'm glad that we can change the culture. I'm glad that we can take control of it, because that's what the blackchannel.net is about. The blackchannel.net is about changing black culture. It's about taking control of it. It is about using the dominant force in the culture to change the culture. Is black empowerment for everyone? Of course not. Most black people, truth be told, aren't for black empowerment. And that's why they're going to turn out to be roadkill. And those who did not go for the okey-doke, those who didn't fall for it, that is going to be the new black gentry. That's going to be the new black society. And it's going to be a group of people who have passed through the fire, and they're going to be just... I think that the new black society that's going to emerge in 30 to 50 years, they're going to be just like the Jews. They are going to be very clannish. They are going to be a group of people who have understood that they can depend on no one but themselves. And you're going to have a situation where black people will be proud that their plumber is black, that their child's piano teacher is black, that they established black schools with black schoolmasters, and that they've also looked at media that reflects their value system and honors them and doesn't owe anything to anybody else or anything else. Last time I checked, I don't see Jews being apologetic about the fact that almost any media outlet you look at is owned by Jews, and most of the people you see on TV, a lot of them are Jewish or at least have some Jewish ancestry. They're not bothered by that. They revel in it. It tells them that they're making progress. They're getting what they want. Why should they be uncomfortable about that at all? And that probably explains why they have the position that they have. They're proud of themselves. They're comfortable in their skin. And black people, you better start relearning how to be comfortable in yours. You're not going to learn that listening to Nicki Minaj, somebody who sits there and dumps peroxide, doesn't have any better sense than to dump peroxide on her head and inject skin bleachers into her body. That person's not going to teach you how to survive. She wants to be a prostitute for the powers that be, I say let her. And you're not going to learn that from Babyface Edmonds, somebody who looks to see where the white people get their dad, let's see if I can jump in front of them and get some attention, see I'm still with y'all. With this fight that ain't got nothing to do with you in the first place, you won't learn it from him. And you're not going to learn it from any fakers or frauds either, who couldn't keep up with intelligent black society, so they got left behind. No. Those of you who've been here for the last 5 years, you already know the score. And those of you who are newer here, this is what it's about. This is where it begins. You are going to eat, breathe, drink, dream, feel, be. Everything about you is going to be black first. You are going to demand that the books that you read be black first. You're going to demand that black people be the smartest ones in the room, and that intelligence isn't going to take the form of ghetto scholarship. I get so sick and tired of it's very difficult for black scholars to be taken seriously. Because on the one end of the spectrum, we got these doped up marijuana smoking hopheads who sit here talking about the ether world and astral projection. You got that on the one hand. These guys who don't really have anything that they can reference, they're just making it up as they go along. And on the other end of the spectrum, we got Skip Gates. A man is 50, I think maybe 60 or better years old, and he's running around with a little kid's name. Black men refuse to grow up. It's hard to take black scholarship seriously. It's hard to take black writers seriously. We have not practiced excellence. In fact, I think we've practiced mediocrity. What we've practiced is just throw something out there and see what happens. It ain't good enough. I've been good in the 30s, it ain't good enough today. I want to see black people in charge. I want to see the same way that black is the leading edge in popular culture, I want to see it as the leading edge in economics and politics. But that's only going to happen when black people decide that we must be the most informed people in the room. have to revel in learning about the world the way that it is. If somebody's coming up to you with some quasi-religious pap, you got to put that stuff to the side and move on. Because the world is governed by rules. And those rules are not about what religious belief system you have or about whether or not you think that the UN is going to give you a document so you can be sovereign and that's going to free you. And it's certainly not about whether or not you are able to force businesses to take your money because you don't have the sense that God gave a goat to realize that if a man kicks you out of his store, you should not have been there in the first place. Now, when TBA told me years ago that the documentary was going to be kicking off, the first thing that I said was, how do I get involved? And to me, that was an important moment for myself. It was a turning point in my own development because I had spent my entire life watching as white supremacists and bigots mounted media assault after media assault against us, and all they had to do was just say, we're going to tell the truth about Robert Mugabe. We're going to tell the truth about the Black Panthers. We're going to tell the truth about this person or that person. And white people instinctively said, where do I contribute? That's an instinctive response by white people. You want to know why? It's because they understand how the world works. And they understand that if somebody is putting forth an effort, the only way that it's going to have maximum impact is for it to be properly funded. They get it. They understand that. And that's the reason why when you look up and ask who owned BET, it wasn't Robert Johnson. It was Sumner Redstone, chairman of Viacom. You sit there and you want to know who owns the Boondocks. Viacom owns them. Who owns, Tyler Perry movies? Who owns them? Lionsgate Films owns them. Yeah, there'll be some good black people will make a couple of halfway decent films, and the Weinsteins will get the money, or Universal will get the money, because we as black people don't believe in owning anything, because we have a mentality of do the bare minimum. I'm going to do my 8 and hit the gate. If I work part-time, I'm going to do my 4 and hit the door. Don't you want to be the boss? Yeah, but that'd be nice to sit in the boss's office, but the boss, you know, he's got to put in some overtime. The boss, he got to fill out a lot of paperwork. Ooh-cha! I hear the boss, when some money got lost, he got chewed out by the shareholders. Yep, take a look at the car that boss drives. Take a look at the house that he's in. He actually has a retirement fund, and nobody's going to mess with that. See, that's what happens when you decide you're going to do more than the bare minimum. What you're going to do is you're going to start to acquire things, and you'll hold on to them. So you can pass them on to future generations. But if you have an employee mentality, then you look and say, all that work, all I want is just to floss for my friends. And then you wonder how 39,000 strong, intelligent black women wound up East Point, Georgia, fighting over 800 housing vouchers. 39,000 people competing over 800 housing vouchers. And how many of those properties belong to black people? Probably not many at all. Even in our poverty, we don't have the ability to help each other, even in poverty. That's the condition that has to change. The single most important issue facing us right now is economics. And it has been for a very, very long time. Economics is not something to be feared. It's not something to be avoided. It is something to be learned. It is something to be understood, and it is something to be utilized. Economics is a tool of empowerment. But that only matters to you if you're interested in power, wealth, and influence. If you look at your children as being heirs of the things that you have done and acquired in this world to be passed on from one generation to the next, if you want your people to remain on this earth, then it matters. On the other hand, if you're not, well, then you'll find some feel-good excuse so you can feel better about not doing what you had to do. That ain't me. And that ain't us. You know, over the weekend, we've seen a couple of big changes that have taken place in the media landscape. Obama has declared that he's not going to stand in the way of this common carrier thing. And AT&T continues to eat the universe. And as if that wasn't bad enough, we got black people who are actually sitting around, and instead of deciding to educate their people, they're asking, how can we entertain them instead? There's a lot of things that are changing right in front of us. But the one thing that is not going to change, mission of intelligent society, I'm liking the things that I'm seeing. I like the fact that, you know, just a little over 2.5 weeks ago, the big question mark was, could intelligent black society actually assert itself?
No, there. I'm not sure what happened. It's still showing him on the line, but not sure what's going on there. I'm going to see if we can check on that in just a moment here. There is something in particular that's on my mind, though. Brothers and sisters, here's the issue for me. And I'm going to just tell you right now that okay, did something happen here? Okay, no, that was me. All right. Okay. It looked like it blinked out there for a moment. So everyone should be able to hear me now. Everyone should be able to hear me, and you should be there. Not sure what, well, like I said, I may have reloaded things. I hope I didn't hit the wrong thing for that, but okay, yeah, everything is okay as far as that's concerned. All right, I'll see if we can try to get Professor Truth back on the line here. But there is something before I get back to him. Brothers and sisters, there's something I want to talk about here real quick. First, folk here tend to get scared, and they get real antsy once we start talking about money. And I've noticed that. A lot of people are getting real scared. They get real antsy. They get real neurotic once we start talking about money. Talking about money, and all of a sudden people want to sit up here and want to get funny style. Since I reloaded it on Blog Talk, I've only had a couple of people who wanted to speak because we're just talking about money. They heard us talking about NAM. They heard us talking about crowdfunding. And I noticed that it was a situation where people were saying, okay, I'm going to see if I can just wait it out because there are a bunch of people who are sitting around us and they are not really something done. They're not really interested in getting something done. It shouldn't be a situation where people are sitting up here asking questions. You would think that at this point people would already know the answers to this. You would think that after George Zimmerman that people would know the answer to this. You would think that after the LAPD people would know the answers to this. White people do not They don't slug it out with you over their ideology. They talk with their dollars and with their money, and that is it. But they don't speak with anything else. Black people, on the other hand, are trying to figure out what they can do to try to avoid adult responsibilities. I'm watching today online, and I saw that there's a Goldie Taylor from MSNBC. She wants to do a documentary now. Take a look at that. Now, understand something, though. She wants to do a documentary. Now, this is a woman who's been on international television. International TV. And yet, she wants to do a documentary, and she's trying to raise $53,000. Now, she's worked in corporate media, but she wants $53,000 to do a documentary that she's already started on, by the way. $53,000. So far, she's raised $22,000. And they got 24 days to go. They got $10,000 from one donor. They got that from one donor. Now, we don't have that. Not here in this place, we don't. We don't have that option. You see, we are actually going to have to do some real work, and we're actually going to have to come together to make some things happen. We don't have Comcast, one of the mega corporations behind us. We don't have that. That's right. You're going to have to actually get up and do something on your own. But some of this that I'm seeing here today, that's not going to work, y'all. That's not going to work. A situation where we are sitting up here watching while Goldie Taylor and her corporate friends are putting their stuff together, and yet black folk are sitting here struggling to get across the finish line. We're struggling to get across the finish line because Negroes are taking a look at this and saying to themselves, I think I can sit down now. This is why you got a whole website right now with hundreds of people watching and listening live right now, and yet our amounts haven't moved. And the amounts haven't moved because everybody is looking around for somebody else to do something. There is nothing in the world that you are trying to do that is going to get you taken care of better than supporting 7 a.m. Nothing. There is nothing that we could be doing that is more important. Nothing at all. Because nobody else out there is speaking on this. Nobody. Nobody else out there is talking about the real reason that we're in the situation that we're in. And that's why we're in a situation of having to sit up here and remind people about these things, because nobody wants to talk about that. They would much rather instead discuss other things. These things scare you because I'm discussing adult responsibility, and so many of you have been conditioned to think to yourselves that, I'm not really interested in that. I'll have somebody else pay my way. Understand something, people. You heard Umar Johnson say it in our video preview of 7 a.m., The Art of War, that the hand that pays is the hand that rules. Understand that. Pays is the hand that rules. So you're all waiting for Rosie, for Goldie Taylor to bring you a documentary. Are they going to talk about white supremacy? Are they going to talk about socioeconomic progress? You're talking about crime in East St. Louis, Illinois, but are you going to talk about the black population and their lack of money? Are you going to talk about that? if we don't do it, nobody's going to do it. If we don't do it, nobody is going to do it at all. And that's why it's important, people. Everybody is trying to figure out how they can win the game without putting any skin in the game. I mean, seriously? This is what passes for adult thinking. That you're sitting here looking at the website. Understand, with hundreds of people listening right now, if we got $5, think about that. Already be at our goal right now with $5 from the number of individuals listening right now. But this is what scares people. So here we are, because this is what scares them. That as long as we're talking about all these things in the abstract, that's fine. We start talking about specifics and saying, here's the dollar amount. All of a sudden, Negroes start getting squeamish. All of a sudden, they start shuffling their feet. All of a sudden, they start milling around. All of a sudden, all you folk who are sitting up here right now, understand something. Those of you who got turned up, we know who you are. We know who you are, and it's very, very clear. You see, your mom and your dad gave you nothing. You got nothing from them. You are poor and broke and destitute today, and you know why? Because T.D. Jakes is driving that Lexus. Because your parents made sure that the church had economic empowerment. They made sure the church had total economic autocratic control. The kids, damn the kids. Damn you. The pastor, no limits. The kids, nothing but limits. Your parents made sure that they kept white supremacy economically empowered. Isn't it time that you had somebody tell your story? Isn't it time that you had somebody speak about what happened to you in here? Out there in your life? Isn't it time that you told people that, you know what, I had dreams too. I had things I wanted to do, but I watched the guys at Google do it. I could have done it better. I watched the guys at Apple do it. I could have done it better. I watched all these other people do it. I could have done that. But you see, I didn't really have time. I really didn't have time for that. I don't have time for empowering myself. Because I go into that in my documentary just like I do on this broadcast. I talk about what your parents didn't do. We take a look at the civil rights generation and what they didn't do. We talk about all the opportunities that they had and what they didn't do. But you're telling me about what we can't get done here. Just remember that the grave that was dug for you socioeconomically was dug by your parents making excuses every day for what they couldn't do. And then once their years were over, now here you are having to for yourself with a dollar that is worth half what it was when they had it. But you ain't got no blood to tell your story. So many of you take a look at the cowards of the civil rights generation and you yourself, if I was alive in Malcolm's day, if I was alive with the Black Panthers, the police wouldn't be smacking me around like they broad. And the truth is that most of you wouldn't just let them smack around. Most of you would let them have their way with you, since we're discussing whorehouses. You would let them have their way with you. Do you know how many white folk were out there having car washes and lemonade stands and fundraisers for a child killer? All because they were pleased that he had murdered a Black child. They were thrilled with it, and they wanted to show him that, brother, to show you that we... Don't you know that when money changes hands, somebody is dead damn serious when money changes hands? Have you all ever considered this possibility? Take a look at it through this dimension, from this perspective. George Zimmerman murdered Trayvon Martin in cold blood. White folk raised $500,000 for him to get him off those charges. Have you ever thought about the murder of Trayvon Martin as a hit, as a contract? George Zimmerman got paid $500,000 cold cash to murder Trayvon Martin. How many black people are there in the United States? And that kind of gives you some idea of how much it would cost to murder half of us. They just put a dollar value on your life, and you didn't notice that. A dollar value on your life, that it costs $500,000 to murder a black child and get away with it. Brothers, white supremacy will pay that all damn year with a smile on their faces while you sit there laughing and giggling at Mimi Faust. And folks sitting up there following up behind Mimi Faust like she's something good to eat. You just remember that. You just remember that when it was time to actually speak, you didn't have a chance to do that. Dozens of people here listening right now, but man, we ain't got time for that. Let George Zimmerman's people be serious about survival. We will sit and we will wait and we will pray. We'll pray, y'all. If things get really bad, I'll pray about it. And I want those people as far from me as humanly possible. We're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines here right now. Caller from 216, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Yes, this is Herb from Cleveland again.
What's on your mind, brother?
Okay, I've already donated, and I'm going to donate again. And I just want to say again, I truly appreciate the broadcast. I'm from that generation that failed the kids. I'm just from that generation that failed and grew up when Malcolm was alive. I knew of him. Myself, I was in the Nation of Islam when I was 16 years old. And
how old are you now?
I'm 62.
Okay. Just wanted to get some frame of reference on that. Go ahead, brother.
Yes. And I remember the pride we used to have when we had our own businesses. We used to have a whole block. In Cleveland, we used to have a whole block. And not only a whole block, but we used to have like 10 other businesses in the Cleveland area. And we used to be very prideful about what we had, and we lost it all. We used to, and the thing that people don't understand is when you don't have your own business, you don't have a sense of community, and that's very important because you protect each other, you protect each other's interests. I can't understand why people don't want black empowerment for themselves when the Italian Americans came here, they empowered themselves. They used the same formula. Croatians used the same formula. Now the Hispanics are using the same formula. They're not letting distractions get in their way, such as you did one video I saw, said it, a member says it doesn't matter. And you talked about the distractions. And it's very true. Some of us want to chase interracial relationships. I tell people, I say, that's okay if that's what you want. That's not going to bring black men and black women together to build the culture or community. You want to talk about gayness. I said, gay people have their rights and they have things for themselves. I say, then go do that. You have the right to go that way. But that's not going to put black men and black women together and build a culture and a community. So we let all these distractions, the Asians don't let distractions get in their way. They don't have to deal with that. And we don't have to either. So the main thing that I agree with you on is, you know, we give up on the finish line. They always say, well, you know, sit back and watch. Like somebody's digging a hole and you got 20 people standing around looking at it. You know, while the other person decide what they're going to do. keep the donations coming. I got other people that was going to be donating. My daughters saw it, and one of my coworkers saw it, and they were very impressed, and they're going to give, and I'm following up with them, make sure that they do. I've also going to be on the radio stations letting them know about 7 a.m., and I'm going to let them know about it, so the community in Cleveland will know about it. So there's so much that we can do, and these habits that we have was passed down from generation to generation. In the Civil Rights Movement, they didn't have a backup plan. I used to teach history before I taught math and science, but I understand what the Civil Rights Movement did. They didn't have a plan for us to have empowerment. They were happy with the pat on the head and the pat on the butt and wanting to be accepted and simulated. We lost the major leagues. We had something, baseball. We had our own leagues. They took our music. We had our own music. Blacks used to make their own films. Blacks used to do so many things for themselves when we were under segregation, and now we lost the will to do anything. And that's because we didn't have a backup plan. We didn't have a plan to succeed. All we wanted was a simulation, which really only helped the elite, the athletes and the entertainers. The guy on the street, he didn't do nothing for them. So that's what integration was about, really. It was to help the elite so that they can have their liaisons with their friends and whoever their significant others. It wasn't about us advancing with anything. And that's where we're at today, and that's why we've lost our businesses. We lost them because we didn't think about the kids. We didn't think about
Well, here's what happened here. I mean, you make a number of good points here. Here's what happened, though. What happened is that we as black people, we were enslaved for centuries, and then we were released from the plantations, and we had to fend for ourselves. As we were out there fending for ourselves, we got into a situation where we were saying, you know what? I'm going to start doing for myself. And we started doing for ourselves, and then came the Ku Klux Klan. And the Klan showed up and terrorized black people, and we saw that the system was not for us. So we abandoned black empowerment in the hopes that that would get us around the Klan. And then came Timothy Drew and Mark Garvey, And they were the ones who got us back to thinking about what being black means again. And that was when we started with the Harlem Renaissance. That was when Black Wall Street and all that was kicking off. And, you know, we started looking at ourselves as a people. And then the Black Wall Streets were destroyed. And then what we were telling ourselves was that, okay, the Klan and Black Wall Street and the Harlem Renaissance and all that, what is the way that we deal with that? How do we deal with those issues? And the way that we need to deal with those issues was by building an economy. But in came white supremacy again to help distract us, to take our eye off the ball. What they told us was that your number one issue is economic. True. But the reason that it's economic is because of racism. That racism is the reason you have these socioeconomic problems, that you have these social issues. And if you can just get white society to integrate and to accept you, that will take care of your Klan issue, your racism issue, and your poverty issue all in one strike. You'll get all of it taken care of all at once. And let's just admit it, most black people back then and today were waiting for white folk to accept them. They are waiting for white people to accept them. So they saw this as their opportunity to get in there, man. And we can finally force white folk to accept us. And at that point, all the floodgates are just going to open. And man, we're going to be swimming in prosperity and happiness. And we did it, and we found out that not a hell of a whole lot changed. As a matter of fact, some things got worse, because what you did was you gave up socioeconomic control. And going into the 21st century, what I'm saying is that we tried liberation, segregation, desegregation, integration, lactation. Let's try some socioeconomic empowerment. Let's try that now.
And that's so true because when I was growing up, like I said, when I got out of high school, they used to tell us to get a good job, to get a good education. That's what they promoted through down our throats, and then we fell for it. And that's what we were told. To get, you know, you had to get a good education, get a job. So you go to college, and they gave us this bogus information about, you know, you get a degree and all this other stuff. And back then when I was growing up, you could work for Ford. You could work for Chrysler. You could work at the post office because they were still kind of viable. And then all of a sudden those things start beginning to change. And like you said, the socioeconomic thing was not even a thought for that time period anymore until now as we start seeing it, we start losing out to the Arabs coming in, and then next, you know, the Indians, and then, you know, the just other foreigners are coming in, and now we got the Latinos or Hispanics, whatever they want to call themselves. They're now getting in prominence. And we are just sitting there now like a frog that's sitting in the water where they're turning the heat up. We're sitting up here now and wondering what's happening when we're being told what is happening. And like I said, I appreciate the broadcast that you're doing. And Dr. Claude Anderson and Amos Wilson was telling us what was going on. And now you have a vehicle, which I see. I see what you have going on with this documentary, and it's very important. It's important to me. I told my daughter, I said, well, I got 38 more years to see what happens and be part of it. So I got my acknowledgement about the donation. I said, well, I'm going to have another one. And I'm going to keep on contributing until the deadline. And we're going to see this through. And I'm on the bandwagon. I'm on with it. And other people I've talked to are very much interested. And we're gonna help push it. I'm not going to stand there and just watch it and wait and see what happens. So we got some other people in Cleveland that I heard. Another guy was from my area called in. Just want to let you know we're going to support and get it through. So that's all I have to say.
Well, I did have a couple of questions here, if I may.
Because sure,
I'm very glad that you mentioned that. But exactly here, just so we be aware, I mean, why was it so easy for your generation to look at their children and say, it's all right if I don't pass anything on to them?
Okay, well, I think it was, my generation was very selfish, I think, in a way. They just figured back in that time period, well, I got mine, you get yours. Or when you turn 18, they think you're grown, and they, like their parents did before them, my parents used to say, well, when you're 18, well, what are you going to do? And I remember I said, well, I'm going to stay with you and, you know, work and get some things done. The idea was to get you out the house. The idea was I gave you the basics, and now you're on your own. That's what it was. I'll give you an example. I went to school with three prominent people who had businesses in Cleveland. One was a restaurateur. He had four restaurants. The other ones had carryout restaurants. They were very prominent. And the other one, well, all three were in the restaurant business. And they had like, one had like seven chains, one had probably dinners and so forth, sit down. And I went to school with them, and I was introduced to the brother. I won't mention the name or anything like that, but, and the other one was, I just happened to know. And I asked him, I said, well, your dad owns these restaurants. He says, well, what you taking up, business or something? He says, no. I'm going to want to be a police officer. I said, you're going to college to be a police officer? I said, your dad owns five restaurants. What's wrong with you? He says, I don't want to do it. And I was smart enough, due to my thing about understanding business, I said, so you like the lifestyle, but you don't want to do the business. And he got mad at me. He says, well, my father runs his business, and I don't want no part of it. The key thing was legacy. A lot of these guys that had children didn't want to be part of the legacy for some reason. And sometimes maybe fathers didn't want them to run it their way. and certain things happen. That's a key thing, too, is like you said, we don't think of a legacy. And this has been going on for even since Reconstruction, because I have some information about some prominent business people that was in Cleveland in the 1860s, and blacks would not support the business, not 60s, 1880s. They wouldn't support the black businesses. And they wouldn't do it because they wanted to get the favor of whites. And this brother had, I can't think of his name now, I'll get it to you when I call again in time. He had a white sale where he would close his shop and white folks would come in and buy all his goods. And when he died, his business last 5 years, but nobody took it over. And that's why I ask people now, said, do you have a legacy? Do you want to incorporate your kids or relatives into your business that you can trust to help carry it on? And those are the things that we have to ask that I see with foreigners. They have like an inclusion where their people are brought into it. They're welcome into it. And our people just do the opposite. They just want to get you in, get you out. This selfishness of not thinking about future generation. And that's why when people die and they have funerals, they're arguing over the little assets that might grandma or daddy or somebody left over, because we don't communicate that. We don't teach our children that. We don't bring them into an acceptance or love for being in business with each other and just as being family. Because, again, our families are so fractured. I remember saying before, we got family members that don't want to see other family members to be successful in anything. And because of these things and these divisions that we have within our families, I came to agreement with you and many others. You got to come loose and get with people who want to help you to say something. That's what you're talking, that I'm getting to just now of what we're talking about. We're going to have to cut dead weight and be more accepting of saying we have to form that nucleus now of saying we have to recultivate ourselves. We have to reinvent ourselves to be more accepting to each other, but we have a premise. We can't let the distractions or other people to get in the way, like they have been doing. We have to understand that we can't allow the buffoonery to continue amongst us. And I told two of my business associates, I said, if you can't donate to this cause, we can't do business. I want to know who's with me and who's not. And so our generation just said, they pass it on from the older generation. You're on your own. You got to take care of yourself. And,
so they did not take it. They took their job as integrating. They did not take it as their job to pass something on to their children. They just, these are the problems I was born to, and I'm just going to hand it off to the kids, let them solve it, and they just kick the can down the road. And who cares if the kids are starving or if they're left to be victims of white supremacy or become a permanent underclass? And what I'm saying is that's satanic. That makes you a Satan. When you look at your children and say, I don't give a damn what happens to them, you become walking evil. You have become
That's what they have become. Yeah, and you see it now. It's even prevalent today. Some people don't care what happens to their kids. And this evil and selfishness is what keeps us in poverty today. This evil thinking, maniacal ideas that you don't take care of future generations have left us in poverty, left us killing each other. You would be surprised how many children have us strong disdain for their parents. And some of them just call them donors or, sex donors. There's a lot of contempt because we have not learned the lessons of family unity. We haven't learned how to bind together. And the African proverb is true. The ruins of a nation starts in the homes of the family. And we got some people that just do not care about the children. They don't care about future generations. It is very evil. It is satanic, as you say. And it's an abomination to me. And
I mean, Goldie
generation
is making a... Everybody in America can make a documentary about black poor neighborhoods. Michael Moore's Roger and Me was about Flint, Michigan. And that's just a bunch of poor black folk. Now, Michael grew up in Flint, Michigan, but today it's just a bunch of poor black folk. Benton Harbor, the headquarters, the city of headquarters of Whirlpool Corporation, that's nothing but a bunch of black folk. Detroit, home of the Big Three, but that's nothing but a bunch of black folk. They fled from the southern United States. You all heard from Malcolm X, fled from the southern United States. They fled from the west. They all went north. And those are the areas that they settled in. Malcolm X, his nickname was Detroit Red, even though when they moved, they went to Lansing. But he was like, I knew Lansing, so I just told him I was from Detroit. They called him Detroit Red. And that was what black folk did. But the problem is that, okay, you moved and we went to these places and you dominate all these poor places like that, but is anybody taking a look at what the hell happened? Is anybody actually taking a look at what occurred here? It's a bunch of little old folk in Cleveland and a bunch of little old folk in Cincinnati. That TV show Wire in Baltimore, and what they show you, a bunch of little old folks scared to come out of their homes. You know why? Because the children that you gave nothing to are feasting on you.
Right.
That's why. That's why you're scared to walk out your front door, because you gave birth to the mongrels that are now turning around and biting you. And you know what? That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's cannibalism. You're cannibalizing
because
yourself.
What you reap, you should sow. What you've sown, you should reap.
Yeah.
What you have sown, you should reap. And when
and
you
we...
give the children nothing, you shouldn't get anything.
And that's what we did. We have literally turned these kids out and turned them away. And then you wonder why they hate you, why they can kill without even thinking about it. They don't have the compassion. Like you said, they have to fend for themselves. Their kids that I know that have to raise the kid, they have to raise their own little brothers and sisters by themselves, by the parent, or I should say the donor, is out partying. The donor is out doing drugs. The donor is out having other babies by other people. I'll give you an example. One of my students told me his mother's 37 years old, has 12 kids, and just had a newborn 2 months ago. And I'm like, seriously, how are we going to build anything when we got people who have families all over the place? And the guy can't take care of one. He's got five different families. Okay? This is what we've allowed to happen. My generation didn't say anything about that because the other generation didn't say anything about it. My generation is the one that says, oh, it's okay. It's like the Wild Wild West. You can do anything you want to do in the black neighborhood. Nobody says anything. They cower down. Nobody wants to stand up to the drug dealer. People, when I was growing up, they used to have a film called the Mac Superfly. When that was an era when we said we was black and proud. The back came on. Next you know, the pimp and the hoe is the hero. Hollywood started putting that through the visual effects of Hollywood. Next you know, Malcolm X takes a back seat. All of a sudden, the pimp and drugs. Richard Pryor was part of that group. So now they became, that culture became the lead, you know. So Hollywood helped with that. The Hollywood Negro set that up. And so next thing you know, again, here we go again. We're going down the slide from the Afro to the Afro-do. That's where we came from. Then all of a sudden, it's dressed like a peacock. Now, you know, again, selfishness. Nobody brought that to attention. Children, women having babies out of wedlock is nothing new. They've been doing that when I was growing up. They used to just send the girls away, but they don't do that now. Now, it's a badge of courage. When you're with your girlfriends, they all share some of them share the same boyfriend. And then, you, like you said before, and you wonder why we got special needs. We haven't said anything. Our women and mothers have sold their children for an SI check. They sold them for a welfare check. These are the things that my generation didn't check anybody on. And so, yeah, my generation and the ones that were before me, with the freedom that they had, they didn't have the sense of responsibility and accountability. And this is what we're reaping. We're reaping, if you look at the pattern of every city, you go to Atlanta, I don't care if it's Atlanta, like you said, St. Louis, Chicago, every major city that blacks are in. And I'll tell you for myself, is when I was a young man, I saw it coming when I was 14 years old. I saw my neighborhood beginning to change. Once a thriving, every thriving area that black, that was, when blacks moved in the 40s up to the early 60s, 1965, I saw it starting to collapse. I started seeing the businesses that blacks had begin to deteriorate and leave. As soon as that civil rights bill was signed, the so-called blacks who are the working middle class, those who worked in the factories, left the city, moved to these areas, what we call Maple Heights in Cleveland, Bedford Heights, Warrenville Heights, Shaker Heights. They moved to those areas. Those areas were predominantly white. They moved there, and they destroyed most of the school systems, got destroyed. Blacks, even today, they moved in these areas, claiming they want a better education for their kids. Their kids still have the same mentality. They're lowering the rate, the academic rate of the school. The housing, they brought the same habits that they claimed they were running from, they brought to those suburban areas. We bring blight. It's like that old story called the never-ending story, where this fairy tale where this thing called the big nothing comes up and devours everything. I said, that's us. We destroy. We destroy. We don't build. We haven't built anything since 1963. We haven't built a thing. My generation, no, they were too happy with the job. They were too happy to retire. And they were too happy having children. And their children were the ones who were beginning to have other kids. So my daughters are around your age. Well, they're a little younger, but they're in their 30s. And in my heart of hearts, I'll tell you this, I believe it's your group. It's going to be the one that's going to help us get through. Because the mistakes mine did, they just rather just, they're embarrassed, too embarrassed to even say anything about it. They really are. Because we say, we dropped the ball. I've been saying this for 46 years. I said, we dropped the ball. Folks, we dropped it. We fell for the okey-doke. And here we are, senior citizens. I still own the business. I told him, I said, I can't retire because I don't want my grandson to not have a future. So I can't retire. I got to stay in this fight. So I'm going to stay in the fight as long as I can on this earth. You see, that my grandson has he has a legacy. I have a business. Now, if I live long enough to see him into it, I hope so. But if not, he'll have something. But my mother gave me something. She left me a legacy. She couldn't leave me a business, but she gave me a nice amount of cash when I got married. And she said, do something positive with it. At least she did do something. At least I had family members that were business savvy. So I was blessed with that. I was blessed with positive men in my community, in my family. So I was blessed with that. But the others,
well, most young black people today have not had that at all. That is the result of the sexual liberation generation. They didn't concentrate on economics. They concentrated on feminism. And yeah. I want birth control. Not what am I doing for my kids, but how can I make sure I don't have kids because I'm doing a whole bunch of crazy sex out here. That's what they concentrate on. And to be a generation of people who are without honor. There's a reason why white men make sure that they remind their sons and remind their daughters what they did for them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why they do that. And the reason that they do that is because they understand that those children are their legacy. They understand that. But black people are not building one.
No, we haven't
built a legacy. And that's why most people are sitting up here looking at us crazy, because they don't understand that your children don't respect you. Black children, they talk about black children act in school and whatnot, but the truth is these black kids go crazy on their parents. And the reason why is because what have you given them? What have they got because of you? That Section 8 housing, they don't have you to thank for that. Those food stamps, they don't have you to thank for that. And they know it. They know full damn well that you got a bunch of black folk who are wards of the state and are happy to be so. How the hell are your children ever going to respect you being wards of the damn state? You're supposed to be their leaders, and yet you haven't been able to lead them to overthrow white supremacy. How in the hell do you expect them to respect you?
Well, that's why they say, my generation up to say, I don't understand these kids. I don't understand why they feel this way. Why are you doing this? Well, like you said, if you haven't been a good caretaker, you haven't been a benefactor, you haven't learned, I'm trying to think of this word, benevolence. We haven't learned how to be benevolent to each other. See, we want to talk this stuff in church. Like I said, they want to hide behind religion. They want to hide behind, they just, like I said, those distractions and say that, well, if you pray hard enough, this will happen. I remember one sister got mad at me and said, well, I'm going to pray for you because your thoughts, what you think about how you talk to us about what we've done to our children. I said, well, I don't want you to pray for me because your prayers are not working for you. I said, if your prayers are working for you, then I can say something.
That
your
was
prayers
a
bit, aren't working
that was
for
a big
you.
Statement right there. I don't want you praying for me because your prayers aren't working for you. That's an epic statement. That is an epic statement. It is a proven fact of history that the more that people, the less money people have, the more praying that they do. And the more financially affluent people are, the less praying they do. It is a fact. It's not an opinion. It's a fact. You see, here's the thing, brother. I want respect. I don't want popularity. I want respect. I want to be respected. And I understand that respect is not given. Respect is earned. You earn that. And we have a bunch of black folk who they do not know what it's like to earn respect. Now, I'm watching right now, and it's amazing, brother. You know, our numbers are starting to go up here again. And for those of you who are not listening and watching here, while me and the brother were talking here, we just passed the mark that we set for ourselves this last time. We just passed that. But to be totally honest with you there, we can't sleep on that.
And you should sleep on it because, like you said, this is now time for, you can't sleep. It's got to be 24/7 now. You can't sleep and just wait on things to happen, because if you do that, then you're going to wonder what happened. It's time to make things happen. And the only way you're going to do it is just be vigilant now. It's not about sitting back wondering what somebody else is going to do. You've said it, and it's been proven. Can't be lazy now. We've
you know,
got
I
want to
scare some people. I want to scare some people tonight, brother.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about this for a while. I think I'm going to put this out there. Everybody out there, because I know that some of the figures we put out there might be a bit much for some people. I want to scare some folk tonight. Let's see who's really serious about this stuff right here. Now, I will allow people to choose one or the other. If you've already given and passed it, then, like I say, I'm probably not going to make that eligible. I mean, you'll have to do it again or whatever the case might be. I won't give credit for it like that. But for everybody who has not reached that executive producer level, because I'm going to have one for co-executive producers, but for everybody who doubles co-executive producer, go take a look at how much you have to rate for that one. But if you give a double co-executive producer, that's for people who have not already done it. If you double co-executive producer, which, yeah, that should be the second to the last perk there. That one should be 1,000. If you double that, I'm thinking that I want those people to be part of a special group that when we do the commercials in those markets, that your name is on the commercials, you know, at the end. Now, of course, it's going to be up quick, okay? It's like with the movies. It'll only be up there for like 2 seconds. But, I mean, well, yeah, but if you had time to do a whole commercial just showing your producers, that would be, I'd have to buy a lot more airtime. So, but, I mean, it'll be quick, but you'll be able to tell people, hey, take a look at what I'm working on. Take a look at what we're doing. Take a look at what I'm a part of. I mean, I want to, even for people who have not seen 7 a.m. and never seen it, I want to make it where they can see your name.
Yeah.
They won't be having to see it through a bunch of other stuff. It'll just be a black screen that just says, you know, 7 a.m. coming soon. You know, it'll say the title, directed by, you know, cinematography and the producers. And it'll show the names of the people who, after tonight, starting tonight, I think I'll make that a possibility for people. That if you give double the co-executive producer credit, which will be double the 1,000, if you do that, then your name goes on the television commercials as a producer. As an executive producer for it. I think that's something after tonight. I think that's something we want to do because there are some people who are like, you don't want to wait until this thing comes out. You want it to be there when this thing comes out. I think I want to start looking into doing that. I think I'm going to start doing that. I don't think I have the ability to add any more perks. I don't think I have the ability to do that, but I think just start letting people know that I will. If it doesn't let me add it officially as a perk, I think I'll just start honoring it for people if they do it and whatnot. I think I'll start doing that. So that way you all can actually start seeing it from the beginning and you can just say, hey, I was there for the whole ride because respect matters to me and being respected matters to me because we have spent the last 160 years on our damn knees. And let's just be honest, it was because of cowardice. Do you notice that young Japanese people today, they talk about a lot of people. They talk about ancient Japan. Do you know who young Japanese people do not talk much about? They don't talk very much about that World War II generation now, do they?
No, they don't.
Have you all ever noticed that in your Japanese anime and whatnot? Do you know that there's not a whole lot of respect given to the World War II generation? I did not say to Pearl Harbor and the World War II events. Talking about that. How many of your anime that are based in modern times today, not the futuristic stuff and not the ancient past, the stuff that's meant to be modern, how many of them have a bunch of senior citizens who are given a lot of reverence and respect? Because the young Japanese people, when they look at their elders, all they can see is that you lost the war and there are white people who lord over us at Okinawa. That's what we see. We see that you lost the war and white men tell us that we can't even have a military of our own. White men tell us what we can do with ourselves. And you actually bow to the people who killed 150,000 of us in the streets. You bow to them. But if you take a look at their movies, if you take a look at their anime, if you take a look at that, Dragon Ball Z is not giving up a bunch of respect to senior citizens. That's, is that, kind of makes you think that that's the reason why so much of their animation is about fantasy or the ancient past or the distant future. Not a whole lot of it dealing with today. And when it does deal with today, senior citizens are practically non-existent. Got people on my website who watch anime. Those of you in the chat room, if I'm lying about it, call me on it. If I'm lying about it in the chat room, somebody sit up and say, TBA, you don't know what you're talking about. They love senior citizens in anime. In modern times now, not the ancient history stuff and not the distant future. For anime where it's based in the modern era, a bunch of senior citizens getting respect. They show senior citizens as buffoons. They show them as wacky. They show them as deft. Show them as revered. They show them as revered in the samurai times. They show them as revered in the future. They do not depict them as honorable and revered today. And what? Why is that? Because as far as the children are concerned, you ain't got nothing worth honoring. As far as the children are concerned, you haven't earned any respect. Take a look in Taiwan at the parliament. The young politicians literally assault the older ones. Y'all see the damn fights on TV that they have in the Taiwanese parliament? I mean, we're talking about full Nelsons, clotheslining people, drop-kicking people, the men punching the daylights out of the women. But that's okay because the women are jumping on the men. That's quite all right. You turn your damn back on one of them females, you're liable to catch a damn iron bar across the back of the head. Why did you hit that woman? Because she was going to hit me.
Yes, respect is earned. We have, like I said, if I can only speak for the generation that I say, no, we didn't earn that respect. And the only way this is ever going to get done is, like I said, is your generation to be the one that's going to do it. The only thing that my generation do is, like I said, I'm going to be in it. Regardless, I'm going to be in the fight with it regardless. Those who are savvy enough and understand, they'll join. They'll do it. They'll do what's necessary. But most of them, they're tired and they're beat, and they've already acquiesced to what they're going to do. They're just going to retire and go away.
Thank you very much for saying it like that. Can we just be honest about the civil rights generation? Most of them have already thrown in the towel.
Yes,
most of them threw in the towel a long damn time ago. There ain't no fight left in them. They're not fighting nothing. All they're doing is waiting for what they always asked for, their pie in the sky and their heaven in the hereafter.
Yes.
Most black folk from the civil rights generation are just waiting. What they always told you, they were telling the truth. I'm just waiting for my turn to die. I'm waiting until it's my time to die. That's all.
Yeah, and another thing, when they talk about, like we're saying, we're talking about the here and now. And I remember I had another talk with someone who was talking about, well, I'm waiting to glory and all this other stuff. I said, look, you Negroes didn't do anything here on earth that's worthy of anything. What makes you think you're worthy for something up there or wherever you want to go? You haven't done anything of benevolence here. Have you fed the hungry? Have you clothed the naked? Have you educated those who are uneducated? Did you help your brother and sister with even a loaf of bread? Most of them would be able to say no. Did you help anything? No. So, again, it's that that sick mentality of thinking that they're going to get something for nothing. It's about the here and now. It's about now. So there's a few of us that are around that is not going to go away. And I'm one of them. And there's some others. There'll be others. You know, some of us we're gonna do what we can do. I want to see it through. I want my grandson to have a future and future generations of my nephews and nieces. I want them to have a future. And I'm going to be a part of it. I want to give as much as I can and do as much as I can in this fight. And that's just the way it is. And the others who don't want to do anything, the hell with them and move on. That's all you can do. And when we succeed, which we will, I told my friends, I said in my heart of hearts, I kept saying, I don't give up hope. Like I said, now the war, let's use it. Learn how to fight your battles and stay away from the black power pimps and the coons and buffoons and weed out the ones that are not going to help you. That's the best way to do it. And quit spinning your wheels and waiting on something to happen. This is a 24/7 fight. White supremacy is 24/7. It does not let up. It will not let up. It cannot let up. We have to understand that. You can't fall asleep at the wheel like we have been. Civil rights people, they were happy just to be get to sit in somebody else's restaurant. They were happy to go to somebody else's school. They were so happy to just be accepted so they can interracial date. They were so happy they could intermarry. They were so happy to go to the ball games now that they can't afford to play and got rid of an economic system. I told somebody, Jackie Robinson. I said, I don't think Jackie Robinson is a hero to me. I said he helped bust up the Negro Leagues with the others. We had our own economy. We had our own World Series. We gave it up. Now you can't, how many blacks go to baseball games? Can't even afford to go to the games. We had blacks, we had our own things, and we gave them up. Gave them up. All to be assimilated and not gain anything. Dr. King even said it himself. He said, I sent my people, this thing called integration, I sent my people to a burning house. And yes, you did. You sent us into a burning house. And we've been roasted. We went to the gas chamber and didn't know it. We just blew it. And Marcus Garvey was right. The elite didn't want to hear that. The elite don't want to even hear how the March on Washington was really Kennedy's March on Washington because he intercepted it. And Dr. King and the others, I don't want to get on the bandstand saying it, but they were bought. And Malcolm exposed it. He exposed the march and how they were paid. You want to talk about civil rights? Yes, they were paid. Millions of dollars to split. And he had a dream, which has now became our nightmare. It still is our nightmare. And we gave it up. And now we have to start all the way over again to the drawing board. I'm tired of hearing people say, well, we gave the world civilization. Well, we need to learn it again ourselves. We're not
just like the Japanese, they don't talk about the old folk from the civil rights days. They don't talk their World War II generation. Black people can't talk about ours either. That's why we only talk about the ancient past, because we can't point anything in the last 100 years worth keeping. I want you all to understand that, because that's a tough damn pill to swallow, but it's about time somebody told you. It's about time we faced up to the truth. The reason that black people do not talk about the last 50 years, 70 years, 100 years is because there really isn't anything great that happened. Hell, when you do talk about it, whether you come back with 12 years a slave, that's what we come back with. Well, I want to thank you for giving us all here tonight, brother, and especially thank you for all of your support and, you know, for spreading it to people and getting the word out there, because it's woefully few people from your generation who are willing to admit to their sins and what they did wrong, and that's why respect for them is so sparse. That's why it is so incredibly sparse.
It's understandable. And, like I said, I don't consider myself old man, but chronologically, but mentally, I'm still available. I'm still understand. I understand what we're going through, and you know, it is a tough pill to swallow, especially when you say we dropped the ball and nobody wanted to pick it up. And now, like I said, you're picking up the mantle, and several other people are picking up the mantle. I enjoy the broadcast because I think the way you talk is the way I think. Professor Truth, I think the same way he does. And I just never gave up the fight, and I'm still going to be out there with it. I want to, like I said, I want to see this through. I want to see it through. I hope to live another 38 years to be 100 to see it. But I want to see it, hoping that it comes quickly, you know. But I, in my heart of hearts, it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen because we're now doing something that we never talked about. We got to separate, we got to defend the herd. We can't carry deadbeats any longer. We got to call, I don't call our women bees and whores, but like I said, we got the hood rats, the simps, as they call them, and the crazies. We have to shake them loose. Accountability is now the thing that we have to deal with that. You got to be accountable for what you do. And beforehand, we used to say, well, you can't judge me. Yes, we can now, because we didn't judge you, and this is what happened. We didn't have a code of honor. We didn't have a code of ethics. We did nothing but misappropriate behavior throughout these 50 years, and it has cost us dearly. It destroyed our children. It destroyed our economy. It destroyed us as a people. And before, and I always remember hearing this, they say, before people are about to go under, there are people that come in and warn them about their situation. And the few that hear it and heed it, they leave and leave the others to their vices and then leave them to their own suffering. And that's what's going to happen. We have to leave them. And I accept that. I believe in it. And I say black first, not last, but black first. That's all that matters now. Black first.
Black first, brother. Thank you very much for joining us. That was a very sobering phone call for me. Not too many people from the civil rights generation who are willing to speak the truth, fess up to it, and own up to what happened and their shortcomings. I'm fighting like hell to try to give the next generation after mine some semblance, because those kids are becoming grown now. I'm trying to give them some semblance of a head start on something so that they know that everybody didn't just sit and drop the ball, and that I don't want them to give a single iota of an excuse or a pardon to anyone from my generation, because my generation had it preached to us just like his generation had it preached to them by Malcolm. There was no one who didn't know. I want these kids to go on Facebook and on Twitter and see their mother and fathers shaking their asses and showing their drawers and their panties and calling my broadcast saying that you can respect single mothers who do that and you can respect Negroes who won't work and do that. And I want their kids to see them for what they really are. And then I want them to take a look at us. Take a look at the black panel. Take a look at what we did. Take a look at how we did. And take a look and see what intelligent black really looks like. Professor Truth, I'll let you have the last word.
Your Black Authority, I want to thank you for all the work that you've put in. We've had a lot of people who have not been staying the course, but you have been one of them. You've been an inspiration. You brought the leadership. And because of that, when we say black first, what we're really saying is that the legions of the Black Authority are on the march.
I want everybody to understand something. You have not seen a project this audacious. And I'm going to say this just like it is. There has not been a project in the interest of black people that was this audacious since the Black Panthers themselves. Not something that's looking to be this world-changing. That was more grassroots, to be totally honest with you. I don't think we've ever seen anything on this level since Garvey himself. I'm not comparing myself to Garvey. What I'm saying is that Garvey wanted to buy ships. He wanted to get mainstream. He wanted to do this in a way that everybody could see it. Not to say that the others after him did not. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is we're going to take hold of the mainstream and we're going to put this in everybody's faces. And I'm warning you all. Something I haven't done before, I'm warning you all right now. I'm foot to the floor. Understand something. I'm foot to the floor. This is going to be a knockdown, drag out, anything goes, no rules, Texas death match. Plain and simple. Because you've heard the way I do it and you see the way I do it. So there's not going to be any ambiguity. Imagine me and you with 30 seconds of time on television. Understand the way it's going to be. It is going to be unapologetic, unadulterated, uncontaminated, and uncompromising. So you need to understand, if you're going to attach your name to this, you better get ready. Get ready for a whole new level of scrutiny. Get ready for a whole new level of people analyzing you. Get ready for that. Get ready to be dissected. Get ready to make a lot more enemies than you've got now. A whole lot more. Get ready for a lot of people to sit up here and want to drag you out in the street over it. Get ready for a whole bunch of people to start looking at us totally differently than they do right now. They're going to try to do what they've always done. They're going to try to ignore us. At first they will. They're going to try. But that won't last. That won't last for any real length of time. We're putting them on notice. So understand, we are going to do this. It's going to be full speed ahead. It's going to be damn the horses. We are going to run straight at them and roll right through them. There's no turning back now. We're going all the way. For everyone who has contributed, I want to thank you. The ancestors, thank you. The elders, thank you. Because you have stayed true to what they taught you and what they believed, what they bled and died for. You are the living proof that their lives and their deaths were not in vain. By what you have done here, for every man, every woman, every child who has forsaken the idiocy and the coonery and the buffoonery that was injected to you by white supremacy, for all of you who've done that and you've honored yourselves. I might be doing an after hours tonight here. So if I do, I'll make that decision within the next 10 minutes. But in the meantime, we'll start with the Black Channel broadcast. I might do an after hours here in 10, 15 minutes or so. I'm not sure. I'll have to decide. But if I do, I'll put up a post and you all know about that. And definitely you're welcome to join us. Brothers and sisters, we are not finished yet. We're not finished. That is my message to my brothers and sisters from around the world. We're not done yet. Don't take a look at what we've done so far in the last 2 weeks and figure that we're done yet. Brothers and sisters, we're not done. The other half of my sentence is directed not just at our brothers and sisters, but at you, white supremacy. We are not done yet. With what we've done tonight, we're not done yet. We're just getting started. Trust me, those tank tracks that you're going to feel rolling over you, oh, believe me, brother, we're just getting started. That's the appetizer. Just wait till the main course runs wild on you. Just wait until it does. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, which is probably going to be later tonight here in just a little bit, so if you all want to stick around, you can. But until next time, brothers and sisters from around the world, remember, black is the future. And the future, just as surely as 7 a.m., is uncompromising.